Welcome to JS on Politics, our weekly show where you get an inside look at Wisconsin politics with all of our great reporters and editors at the Journal Sentinel. I'm your host, Greg Borowski, and here's a look at what we'll talk about today. We'll start with the news in Madison, where folks who are hoping for some budget wiggle room didn't get the news they wanted this week, and that includes the UW system, which has been at the center of so many hot-button issues this spring. Then we'll look at a hearing today in Madison on testing at the K-12 level, and we'll put the presidential candidates to test on PolitiFact's Truthometer, and we'll also tackle some reader questions, so stick around to the end and send in some questions as we go. We'll start, though, with Patrick Marley in Madison, who's been following issues at the Joint Finance Committee and with the state budget. So, Patrick, the news this week wasn't great for those who thought there'd be a little bit of breathing room to restore some of the cuts that Scott Walker proposed. Can you tell us about what's before Joint Finance today and what's being pit against each other as this debate goes on?
Sure. The main issue was that on Wednesday, they got revenue projections for months. Republicans have been banking on getting more money than the original projections had shown, thinking that that would help them backfill some cuts the governor had proposed. They did not get that money. They've been told that the estimates are stable, that they're going to get in exactly what they thought, or about that amount. So they've got to now figure out how to deal with a cut of $127 million to K-12 education and a cut of about $300 million to the University of Wisconsin system. They say they're committed to dealing with K-12, but they're less certain about what they're going to do on UW. Today, the Joint Finance Committee is looking at a number of things. This will be their sort of last so-called easy day before they get into the heavy lifting on the bigger pieces of the budget. They're looking at state parks today. They're looking at officer-involved shootings. They passed a law a year ago that said there'd be an outside review whenever an officer shoots somebody. And the Attorney General is finding that most of those police agencies are coming to his office asking him to review these matters. So lawmakers are looking at giving him some more money, some more staff, so he can do that work.
At this stage, though, I mean, when there isn't any sort of safety valve this year in terms of additional revenue, even these little issues sort of become more important, right? Because you've got, if you want to add $1 million back here, you got to cut $1 million from somewhere else.
That's right. They're looking to grab any piece of taxpayer dollars they can. One issue that will be coming up today is a $15 million grant to what's called the Confluence Project. It's in Eau Claire, and it's an arts complex that's proposed. The governor put $15 million for that. We'll see if legislators want to go along with that, but there may be some who say that's $15 million they could put toward schools or put toward transportation, which faces its own set of challenges. So you're right, they're looking for every nickel and dime between the couch cushions, so to speak.
So you're covering the Hunger Games basically today in Madison. Let's talk about what brought this on. The Democrats are saying that, well, you know, the problem here is that Republicans cut taxes too much. Is that really what's behind the issue, or is it that revenue didn't come in as expected? Why are we sort of flat this year?
Well, revenue is exactly where it's expected. The fact is that there were projections made of, inflationary increase for this year. They got those projections. The Democrats said it could be worse. The Republicans said they think it'll be better than the initial projection. So it's not like we're getting no new money. It's just that we're getting the amount of money that was originally expected. Republicans did have a surplus last year. They used that for tax cuts. They argued that that would rev up the economy and get us even more money. The Democrats say the Republicans are responsible for putting us in this position because by cutting taxes, they're depriving the state of some of its revenue, and thus we have to face these cuts.
Right. And yesterday, some of the Republican leaders talked about how they want to preserve reinstate some of the money for K-12 education. And how are they proposing to do that?
Well, they've found a way to do that despite the lack of new revenue. Essentially, there's some accounting mechanisms that they can address. This will not improve the state's gap deficit. It might make it a little worse. And that's so they're kind of working on an issue with some messaging because for a long time the Republicans have said they want to make the state on a better footing as to gap accounting. This wouldn't improve that, but it would get the money to the schools.
Yeah, and just for our viewers, gap accounting is the generally accepted accounting principles, right? So this is sort of, you don't want to use one-time revenues to plug ongoing hole.
The state has a long-time history of using some tricks that wouldn't be allowed in the normal accounting world, such as making a payment on July 1st instead of June 30th. So you put a payment into the second fiscal year, and then it's sort of off the books, though in reality it's an expense that's incurred in the same year.
So is there any appetite for increasing revenue anywhere in terms of vehicle fees or anything? I know there's little appetite for any tax increase, but how do they grow the pie if they can?
So right now we have an issue with transportation that's sort of separate from this debate, where the governor wants to take $1.3 billion out of the transportation fund. He wants to borrow $1.3 billion for transportation. Republicans in the legislature see that amount as way too high, and so they're looking for ways to bring that down. One idea they have is to have a registration fee increase of $25 to $35 per vehicle at $75 currently. We'll see if all the lawmakers are willing to go along with that. We'll see if Governor Walker is willing to go along with that.
All right, let's zone in on one of the specific areas of the budget and bring in Karen Herzog, who's our higher education reporter here. Karen, you've been tracking this and how it relates to the UW system budget. First, what's the attitude, I guess, from the UW administrators to the news yesterday that there isn't this safety valve that they may have been hoping for?
Well, they're still expressing optimism. Ray Cross, the president of the UW system, says that he feels confident that he has had conversations with lawmakers, that they're still going to try to find some way to reduce the cuts. And also he thinks that there are some good chances of getting more flexibilities in how the UW system runs its operations. And that was something that was going to be part of the public authority, which obviously isn't probably going to happen at this point, but there are still things that can be done within state statute.
Okay, so talk a little bit about the impact here. If there isn't room to just reinstate some of that cut, does this pit university against university? Do they go and lobby and say, well, you know, you should cut from corrections or some other part of the state budget? How does this play out, do you think?
Well, campuses already have been looking at potential cuts. Each department, each school has already been told, we need you to look at your budget, see where you can cut in case we need to. So they're somewhat prepared for that. Now, there are some campuses that just aren't going to have the resources. They're not going to have enough out-of-state students that they can raise non-resident tuition and bring in more revenue that way. And Ray Cross said that there's between $20 and $25 million in cash reserves at the system level that will be distributed to the campuses that have a harder time dealing with the cuts. But I think there is potential for, if they don't follow the funding formula that's normally followed for distributing funding, if they don't follow that for distributing the cuts, it could be a little tense between campuses. You know, who gets more money, who gets the biggest cut, who's best able to deal with it.
Yeah, but one question that a reader asked, and I'll sort of rephrase it and use it, but is there any discussion out there that we have too many campuses or too many programs or duplications of effort that you can make cuts either in, you know, narrowly program by program, or you can say, look, we've got too many things. Has that ever come up in the discussion now, or where is that?
That is a big part of the discussion, especially going forward. Now, in the next couple of months, we're not going to see huge cuts in programs, but I do think we're going to see campuses that are being, they're going to be programs, they're going to be academic programs that are going to be shared amongst campuses so that they can reduce the number of faculty they need. There also are administrative things that can be done to, you know, human resources, IT. You know, the UW system was created 44 years ago, and there really hasn't been much done in terms of bringing it up to, you know, current needs, technology, and really figuring out how many programs do we need, you know, in campuses that are 20 miles apart. So that's a big part of the discussion, and that's a broader reform effort that we're going to be hearing a lot more about in the next year or two.
Yeah, Patrick, let me ask you before we shift to the next topic about, you know, what's the appetite in Madison to try to reinstate the higher ed cuts? I know we've heard the leaders say we want to reinstate the cuts to K-12 education, but what about the UW system?
It's clear they're going to take care of the K-12 issue. There's a lot of anxiety among Republican lawmakers at this point on UW. They want to find more money for them. They don't know where to find it. I think the level of concern is different among different lawmakers, but there are many who want to see that number substantially reduced. It's just that they don't know where to find the money. There's opposition to raising taxes. There's opposition to delaying the phase-in of other taxes, other tax cuts that have already been approved. So it's a tricky balance. And I, frankly, we don't know where it's going to come out in the end now.
All right. Well, we'll be following that over the course of the next week and probably talk about it on next week's show. Meanwhile, another important issue in Madison is testing, and that's the subject of a hearing today, which we explored in this tape segment that was taped yesterday. We're here now with Erin Richards, the education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and she's covering a hearing in Madison about testing and assessments. And there's been a lot of discussion and debate about, are we testing our kids too much? Can you tell us a little bit about what will be coming up at the hearing?
The Senate Education Committee is hosting a hearing on testing for groups to come together today to talk about what types of tests are we giving kids, are there too many state-mandated tests and federally mandated tests. In Wisconsin, this is also complicated by the fact that private schools that receive public money are also mandated to give certain tests, and there's some question of whether those schools should give the same types of assessments as the public schools. So this is an opportunity for parents and stakeholders, some school leaders, some people from both the private schools and the public schools, and the State Department of Public Instruction to come together and say, this is what's on the table right now. These are the possibilities for how we could adjust the number of tests we give. But I think it'll be some interesting testimony about, sort of whether assessments are giving us the kind of information we need to help kids do better in school.
Is the argument on that public-private issue that the private schools shouldn't take any tests, or what's the argument for a different test? Where's that coming from?
State law right now mandates that private schools that get public money, which we often refer to as choice schools or voucher schools, that they have to give the same state assessment as the public schools. This year, that's called the Badger exam. It's a new online state exam that's linked to the Common Core state standards. There are some people, both in the private schools that give those tests and some Republicans that are more in favor of private schools giving different types of assessments. Actually, they'd like all schools to be able to have that flexibility, but for all intents and purposes, if you change the law, it would only allow the private schools to give different tests. Public schools still have to adhere to state law. Unless somebody changes state law and says, actually, you can test this many times for your kids. All of this is also overlaid with the fact that at the federal level, lawmakers are looking at rewriting the No Child Left Behind law. And that is the actual law that says all states have to test kids between third and eighth grade and once in high school. There's lawmakers are rewriting that law right now, and how much testing to include in that law is a big point of debate. There are some Wisconsin lawmakers that have also asked their counterparts in D.C. to support a bill that would only test students once in each grade span. So that would be once in elementary school, one state test in middle school, one state test in high school. That's at a really preliminary stage right now, and it's unclear where that's going to go.
Okay. Another important issue this week in Madison was the revelation that there's going to be no anticipated increase in the revenue projections. And I know there's been a lot of discussion for the K-12 level of can some of the money be reinstated that Governor Walker had cut. Do you have a take on what this will mean? I mean, there's going to be more fighting for the same limited amount of money.
That's exactly right. So what you're hearing from public school districts is, look, you've cut us year after year, especially under Governor Scott Walker. We can't keep cutting the way we're cutting without actually getting into some of the programs that you tend to really like. And this means programs that parents tend to really like include programs in the arts, advanced placement courses, extracurriculars. Those are things that for a long time many suburban schools, school districts that have more resources, have been able to preserve. In many of your larger urban districts that struggle with more financial challenges, some of those have been trimmed already. So what you're hearing is this cry, especially from suburban schools and beyond, saying, you can't keep cutting our schools and expect us to be able to perform at the levels we've been performing. So I think what you're seeing now is a lot of district folks were waiting for these revenue projections and hoping that there'd be some more money there, which would, they hoped, come to school, be directed towards schools instead.
One of the key districts, of course, is Wauwatosa, which is politically interesting because it's home to Governor Walker himself. You had a very interesting story earlier this week about how Wauwatosa and other districts are sort of banding together to lobby the government and to raise money to fill in some of these gaps. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found in your reporting?
In recent years, with the budget cuts to schools, some of our strongest voices that have come out in favor of protecting public schools have been school district officials, teachers' unions groups. And now we're starting to see parents really come out of the woodwork and say, these are important to us as well. Wauwatosa's superintendent sent out an email that said, I'm making you all aware that because we may have a $1 million cut in our budget, these are some of the things that could be on the chopping block, things like orchestra, advanced placement classes. That really lit a fire under parents in Wauwatosa to say, we need to do something about this. We need to get people to call their lawmakers. We need to get people to say how much they value their public schools. And that sentiment has been picked up by other groups around the state that are talking about some of the same issues. And they're trying to remain non-political and saying it's okay. You can vote Republican and still support your public schools. But they're really trying to be issue-driven without coming across as simply another Democratic group.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you.
We're back live with a new semi-regular, potentially often seen segment, depending on how these guys do, looking at PolitiFact and the Truth-O-Meter. I'm joined here by Dave Umhafer, one of our PolitiFact reporters, and Tom Kircher, another PolitiFact reporter. And what we're going to do is run through some of the statements that have been recently rated relating to presidential candidates. So you'll hear several from Scott Walker and some of the others who announced this week. So let's start with one that we rated just yesterday from Ben Carson, who announced his campaign this week. And the statement was, this was from a speech he made in Milwaukee a few weeks ago. The statement was, there are more young black males involved in the criminal justice system than there are in higher education. And we rated that one false. Tom, tell us a little bit about why.
In this case, there just was not evidence to back up the statement. We found that there were about 700,000 African-American men, 18 to 24, who are in college, and about 75,000 who are in prison. But there simply aren't numbers for other measures, such as the number in that age group in jail or on probation or parole. So we rated it false.
All right, and we left that one open. If we do get more information, we would go and revisit that question. And
right.
Our next one is from Scott Walker, and the statement was that the recall elections, quote, cost tens of millions of dollars to run. And we rated that one mostly false. Again, Tom, that was when you put together.
Right. I mean, there's the tally came up to 16 million when the governor said tens of millions. It calls to mind maybe 20 million or more. The tally was 16 million, so we rated that one mostly false.
Okay, we have another one from Scott Walker that dealt with sort of the Minnesota versus Wisconsin comparison we hear so much. Minnesota's economic advantage has been in having Republicans in charge of at least one part of government for all but 2 years, while Wisconsin Democrats for many years controlled Wisconsin state government. We rated that one false, and Dave, that was one that you took care of.
Right. The Democrats in Wisconsin under Governor Jim Doyle controlled the whole show for just 2 years, 2009 and 2010. The governor said many years. By contrast, the governor and the Republicans have been in total control of the whole show for 5 years, in year five now. So, and that's really a rare occurrence in recent Wisconsin politics.
Right, and this is a popular comparison for Governor Walker of Wisconsin versus, it's maybe more for the Democrats to say we're not doing as well as Minnesota.
Right, right. Governor Dayton has, things have gone better on some measures economically under his term there, so that's a natural comparison point for the Democrats to make.
All right, here's another one from Scott Walker. Quote, Americans will spend more on taxes in 2015 than on food, clothing, and housing combined. And we rated that one half true. Again, mm-hmm. That was one you put together, Dave.
Right. Collectively, if you look at the total sum of money spent on taxes versus collected in taxes versus spending on those necessities, it's right that taxes were more, 17% more, I believe. But if you look at it from the standpoint of individually, for instance, many poor people pay a higher share of their income for those necessities, in part because they pay so little in taxes.
Okay. Now we're going to turn to a few that were done by the National PolitiFact staff that are from other presidential candidates. This one was from Hillary Clinton, who said the United States is 65th out of 142 nations and other territories on equal pay. And that one was rated half true. Tom?
Yeah, our colleagues found this was a bit of cherry-picking on her part. Hillary Clinton cited one study that didn't have hard numbers. It was a survey of executives saying, what's your perception of gender pay discrimination in the United States? And the United States did rank relatively low in that survey. Conversely, the reporters found that there was another study of 30 developed nations, and the United States, in terms of gender pay discrimination, was second best, so to speak, in terms of relatively little pay discrimination.
All right. We should note that you can find all of these items at our website, which is politifactwisconsin.com, and we've got a very deep well of statements, both locally and done by other websites, part of the network. Here's one from Marco Rubio. The United States is not modernizing its nuclear weapons, and that one by the national staff was rated false. Dave, can you talk about that?
Right. They interviewed a number of experts on this, and the number of warheads is down, and some experts say that the modernizing is going too slow. But it was clear that we spend hundreds of billions of dollars, or at least are planning to, over the next decade, on modernizing nuclear weapons, including things like rocket motors and guidance systems. And that's about all I know about how to modernize a nuclear weapon.
Weapons, all right. That's more than I knew. Another one from our growing cast of Republican candidates is from Mike Huckabee. And the statement was, it says, Huckabee says he, quote, raised average family income by 50% during his tenure as Arkansas governor. And that one was rated by the national staff as mostly false. Tom?
When we rate something mostly false, it means there's only an element of truth. And so in this case, Mike Huckabee, who was the Arkansas governor for about 10 years, the incomes in his state did go up 50%, but that's not counting inflation. So if you count inflation, the incomes increased only about 20%.
Okay. And our last one for this run of candidates is from Carly Fiorina, who also announced just this week. And her statement was, President Obama is not paying women equally by his own measures in his own White House. And that one was rated mostly false. Dave?
Another interesting equal pay claim. The reporters did a ton of work on this. There's 460 people who work at the White House. The average salary is in the 80,000 range. Men do make about 10% more on average than women, but when you look at men and women in the same job title, same job classifications, the salaries were really equivalent, so that's why that came down at mostly false.
All right. We'll end it there for those questions. If readers have statements they think we should check or would like us to check, you can always email us at politifact@journalsentinel.com, and you can also tweet it to us, which is at politifactwisc, W-I-S-C. So we're going to keep Tom and Dave around for our regular segment where we take some questions from readers. They're both longtime government reporters. We have got one PolitiFact-related question and some others we'll tackle. We could still take time if some more come in. The first question is from a reader named Biased Journalism. And this question is, all you guys at PolitiFact do is tear down Scott Walker. It's always Walker, Walker, Walker. Why is he your only focus? Why is he our only focus, Dave?
Well, he's a very powerful governor. He's a presidential candidate and doing quite well. Republicans are in control of Madison and in control of the budget. So we'd be remiss, I think, not to focus a lot on the governor at this point.
But he's, of course, not our only person. And Tom, talk a little bit about how we identify items that we might check and what makes a good fact check when we're seeking them out.
Right. You know, kind of boiled down simply, we look for statements from politicians that make us say, gee, is that true? Really? Is that true? And naturally, we're looking for things that are timely and interesting to readers. And an item has all the more appeal if a statement is made by someone like the governor, who is not only the head of state government, but running for a national office, presumably.
All right, let's take another question here, and this one is from Door County John, who says, how much money is Wisconsin losing because Walker refuses to accept the Medicaid funds offered by the Obama administration?
Well, Door County John, you ask a tough question. There's a lot of moving parts there, but in 2014, the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau estimated that by turning down that funding, the impact was about $500 million over 3 years that would cost taxpayers. And that was based on if officials had fully expanded our main health care program for the poor by taking the Affordable Care Act money from the feds, the Medicaid money. And that broke down to about $200 million over 2 years. And then if we look at the impact through 2017, it goes up to about $500 million.
This one is from Wacker, As opposed to, maybe they misspelled Walker, I'm not sure. But it says, why is Scott Walker being allowed to ignore the law about declaring his candidacy for president when he is clearly running for president? He is avoiding any oversight of his campaign contributions. Who wants to take a crack at this one? It's, others are doing the same thing. It's sort of what the law permits, but he doesn't want to declare because why?
Well, you know, the laws governing this sort of thing have really dwindled down. I mean, it seems like campaigns are taking advantage of loopholes, and the regulation just isn't that strict. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons in terms of fundraising reports and other reasons strategically for the campaign that you don't want to be an official candidate at this point. But to some extent, they're all taking advantage of different ways to get around these rules.
Well, he did, though. He created his campaign in a using a mechanism that doesn't require him to report any contributions yet. Correct.
And I really think it does come down to a strategy question. We saw this week where three Republican candidates announced, but there are others like Walker and Jeb Bush who appear to be candidates who haven't. So a lot of it comes down to what they view as the best strategy to make it a run.
Yeah. And the governor, of course, has said he won't announce until after the budget is done, which is a good spot for a question here on it's, again, a little bit rhetorical. That's how our questions tend to come in. This is from Neil, 1969. Did Walker and the Republicans really think that no one would mind another $127 million cut in K-12 education? How important has the suburban pushback to fund schools been in getting Republicans to suddenly declare that there would not be a cut after all? We talked even earlier in our segment today with Erin Richards about her story, this pushback in the suburban areas, but there's certainly more, you guys have covered politics, when there's cuts close to home, that gets people more motivated sometimes.
Right. School cuts always draw a lot of attention, and there have been school cuts in past budgets. And we had a surplus of $1 billion just a year or two ago, so I think people are sort of saying, where did that money go, and can we get it back?
All right. Well, I think that's where we'll leave it for today. We appreciate all of our reader questions, and thanks to those who have tuned in today. You can follow the work of Tom and Dave on PolitiFactWisconsin.com. You can follow our coverage of Governor Walker as he pursues the presidency, even if he's not saying he is, at jsonline.com/ScottWalker. And we'll be back next week for another show. So see you next week.